down there and enjoy it.
Okay, everybody, go ahead and get started. Magic hour has arrived. Welcome everybody to the Tax Advisory Committee, or we lovingly refer to it as the Tax Committee. This is called the meeting order, and we're going to postpone self-introductions just for a moment. So we have a person on the phone, Laura Brown with RLS, that needs to make a presentation. Unfortunately, has a medical appointment that she needs to attend to. I will give Laura the floor right away. Laura Brown, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your helping me move that forward a little bit.
No problem.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much and good morning, everybody. I would like to give you an update and present to you the draft final coordinated public transit human services transportation plan for the Cuyahoga area, the Cuyahoga region. I've talked to you a few times at the previous meetings as we were going through the planning process, and many of you were involved in that, so I know you have a little background information. But now we have the plan. It is in draft format. It is ready to be finalized. However, it's been circulated around. Comments are still opportunity to comment on it. And I believe maybe it's on the Cuyahoga website now, in case you didn't get a copy yet by email. And if you did get a copy by email, I'll tell you that we received a few comments. Those were addressed, so there have been some revisions. So just to give you a quick background, this plan was initiated because we have a contract with West Virginia Department of Transportation to update the required coordinated transportation plan throughout the state. But Cuyahoga, being an urban area, doesn't fall under that necessarily. So Cuyahoga kind of expanded upon what was already happening in West Virginia and also contributed to the project and sponsored the project so that we could expand it to include Lawrence County, Ohio, the urbanized portion of that county, and also Greenup and Boyd counties in Kentucky. So it's been a very good planning process. We've talked to lots and lots of people. We received just shy of 150 surveys from the general public. We held four meetings that were open to the public, and we spoke to the transportation providers from agencies, public and private, all around, and came up to some consensus on needs, which focus on pretty much a wide variety of, you know, just the day-to-day things that people need to do. Go to medical appointments, go to visit people in the hospital, get to education opportunities, get to jobs if they're not on the public TTA fixed route, access to grocery stores if you don't have a car, access to after-school activities if you don't have a car. Those kinds of challenges presented themselves in our needs assessment. And on top of that, we took a look at some previous studies, including the 2040 Metropolitan Transportation Plan for Cuyahoga, and looked at the needs assessment that was done then as well about transportation. And we were able to see similarities. So we didn't get a lot of public surveys, but we saw the similarities in the results from that study as well. So all that is captured in the draft plan, as well as a synopsis of the great progress that everyone has made since the last coordinated plan back in 2013, and some of the challenges that were faced, because coordination is challenging. It's a simple concept that isn't quite that simple to achieve. I'm kind of moving quickly, but just to give you the conclusion of the plan is the tying together, matching up goals and action steps that can be taken by all of the stakeholders in the transportation world in Cuyahoga to address the needs that were identified. And we have highlighted 10 goals They range from activities that can be completed with no additional funding. It will take some staff time to do some of them, such as participating on the West Virginia Transportation Coordinating Council and sharing with other, in that council, taking the opportunity to share with other state departments, human services and seniors and, you know, education, the whole healthcare, Medicaid, everybody who attends that meeting, and let them know what the challenges are that you're facing at the local level, and also get information and start building bridges there. Maintaining the current levels of service, that's always an important goal. There's a lot being done to address the needs already, and we don't want those to go downhill or change. We want to maintain and then improve upon them. Information sharing was a big focus also on of the goals. Information sharing among the transportation providers. It's always surprising to me, and this is not just in Kiowa, but it's always surprising to me everywhere I go. We get a room full of people that are providing transportation services for their clients or for the public, and they're working toward all these goals and they're doing great. And somebody that's been also doing the same thing at their organization for 20 years doesn't know the other one's doing something, you know. But so there's always that gap in information, no matter how many times you meet and how often you see each other and how well you know each other. There's always that constant effort that has to be made to keep people informed so they know they can refer a client to another service or how to get information about it. So we have some strategies for, you know, sharing information among providers and agencies, such as creating a ride guide or updating a rider guide, continuing to use 211, and then even getting involved in the GoHio app to even spread that information sharing even farther. We have also goals to improve access throughout the community. So taking that sharing information one step farther is the creation of kind of a one call or one click center where people can easily get information about completing their whole trip, even if it involves three different providers. You know, how can we streamline that together? And I should say that these goals are scaled on a, they're given some priority, but they're also realistically scaled for timeline and implementation. Some of this will take some additional funding. Now we're getting into the additional funding ones and some time for planning. We talk about extending operating hours in the service areas, including adding weekend service and evening service. One of the big challenges that we see throughout West Virginia, and we see it here when you look at the Region 2 planning area, so outside the urbanized portion, or even along, as Terry pointed out, even along the urbanized area portion that might not be within the fixed route or ADA paratransit service area, there are zero vehicle households, and there are people that need to get into Huntington along that corridor for everything, shopping, medical, school, work, everything. And transportation is a barrier. So some creative strategies for effectively reaching those communities. The demand may not be super high enough to warrant a big increase in service, but it's still important. And so do we have some safety net? Do we have some maybe smaller services or network of services to help fill those gaps? Also increasing service on weekends, so that people, especially Sundays, but not only Sundays, so that people have an opportunity to go shopping if they couldn't do it during the week, or to go to church, or just the things that we do when we have a car on the weekend. So that's kind of a quick overview. There are 10 goals. The study also includes a demographic analysis. We tried to make the report this year as straightforward as possible. So the demographic stuff and the inventory of transportation provider services is in the back in the appendix, and all the good stuff is right up front so that we don't lose you anywhere along the way. So are there any questions or any comments?
There apparently are none. Laura, thank you so much. Hope your day goes well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I believe the next item on the agenda, Terry Picking is going to take care of that for you. So you're off the
hook. Okay. Okay. Well, thank you all. Have a great day.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you, Laura.
Okay. Bye. Bye. Okay, now we're going to go back to the top of the agenda and welcome everybody here again, and then we're going to do self-introduction. And I want to remind you that we have the sign-in sheet here, and we're going to pass it back around because we know we missed some people signing in. And so if you would, please take the opportunity to sign in. Shalane wants me to remind you that there are plenty of donuts still in the corner back there and coffee. Please eat them. That'll help explain what that comes out around town.
Promote the local economy, y'all.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'll start. I'm Paul Davis. I'm with the Tri-State Transit Authority, and I think I'll go to my left. I'll go to my right. How about that?
I'm okay.
Perfect. Thomas Swift, QATC.
Kelly Ward, 5 Coed.
Luke Stapleton, 5 Coed.
John Callahan with AECOM.
Michelle Grubb, National Flight System.
Jennifer Woodall, Tri-State Transit Authority.
Matt Dillon, KYTC.
Joe Callahan, KYTC.
Chris Kenzie, West Virginia DUP. Planning.
Kevin Sullivan, West Virginia DUP.
Paul Young, Cuyahoga.
Jody Sigmund, Cuyahoga.
Laura Miro, FHWA, Ohio Division.
Founder Engel Smith, FHWA, West Virginia.
Tara Greyhouse, Charleston, West Virginia, MPO.
Ralph Klein, Lawrence County.
Ralph Norman, LJV.
Steve Cole with LJV Engineering.
Andy Shane with LJV.
Beth Fincher, Assistant Engineer, Gallia County.
Brett Booth, Gallia County Engineer.
Good morning, Ted Lozier, Executive Director for the Community Improvement Corporation, Gallia County.
Patrick Galati, Lawrence County Engineer.
Steve Bergman with the mannequins.
Good.
I'm Terry Sticking with Cuyahoga.
Hey, well, welcome everyone. Glad you're here today. I don't know how we got everybody here as free as it is outside, but you're here. Okay, can't get away until Swain says so. So we're looking at the minutes from the previous meeting as distributed, and we will need a motion to approve.
All good. I just told Brittany I'm not on the list for some reason. On the minutes.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, I'll make a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
All right. They're properly moved, and we have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay, the next item on the list is Cuyahoga Transportation Study Project Update. So I think we have some people via phone. High River Bridge Crossing Study, CDM Smith. Who's
coming? Yes, sir. Good morning, everyone. My name is Manuch. I'm here. I'm with CDM Smith, and I'm the project manager for the Ohio River Bridge Crossing Feasibility Study, and I will be providing a brief project overview and update, hopefully keeping it under the three-minute time frame. Are you advancing the slides, Jody?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. If you can go to the second slide, kind of review our project objectives. Our main objective is to evaluate a need for a crossing between State Route, Ohio State Route 7 and West Virginia 193. We would also be evaluating the traffic circulation in the tri-state region and develop future traffic forecast using the traffic demand model. Our third objective for the study is an evaluation of safety and mobility for the local and regional traffic movement. We'll also be evaluating the regional transportation network, including the tri-state outer loop and its relation with the I-64. Project goals as Union City, our goal is to find a balance between the project challenges and opportunities as basis of the approach. As shown, some of the challenges are project funding, right-of-way construction impacts, and reaching stakeholder consensus. Some opportunities, obviously, is the regional access, improved safety and mobility, improved traffic op, and opportunities for traffic economic development. Just to give you an update on where we are in the project, we had our first kickoff meeting on April 9 at Kiowa offices, where we discussed the project progress, identification of project stakeholders, the public meeting format and schedule, and we also developed a draft schedule and discussed path forward for the project. Our current activities include engineering and environmental data collection, development of initial mailing lists for project newsletters, et cetera. Also research and development activities in the project area. We have conducted some field reviews for land use and environmental resources. We have obtained base mapping both for West Virginia and Ohio side of the project. And we've done our initial analysis of the traffic demand to figure out some traffic forecasts. Our plan activities include continuing stakeholder coordination, engineering and environmental analysis, continue with traffic analysis, future traffic forecasts, and start looking at some potential viable alternates. And the last slide is our draft schedule, which we developed jointly with Salim Kayova. I'm not going to go in every line, but the important thing on the schedule is that we will be having three stakeholder meetings. Our first stakeholder meeting scheduled in June, that's the kickoff meeting, followed by our second stakeholder meeting in October of 2019, followed by an informational public meeting. Moving on, we'll have our third stakeholder meeting in May, followed by an alternative public meeting, and we will be submitting the final report on June 30th. And the last line in the schedule is the agency coordination, which is an ongoing activity from the beginning to the end of the project. So that's my update for Ohio River. I'll be happy to answer any questions anyone has.
Any questions? We don't have any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on the agenda is the safety study for Calvin and Wayne County. Steve Deacon with Burgess and Michael.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, committee and others. The study is really just getting going. We're digging in the data, so I'm going to give a quick overview of the scope and then a little bit of information about some of the data we're seeing so far. Next slide, that's just me. We can skip past that. And then overall, the study purpose and goals are to create a safer transportation network for both motorized and non-motorized modes of transportation in the two counties, with the focus on the urbanized areas of Cabell and Wayne counties, but we will extend the analysis into the counties if we see significant crash patterns or issues in other places. One of the goals is identify the crash trends, what's leading to crashes, and really hone in on high crash locations, because one of Kiowa's jobs is to identify projects, which leads to the next goal is to recommend infrastructure improvements and other strategies to address those crash trends and high crash locations. and then ultimately prioritize those improvements and strategies so that Cuyahoga can get those into their planning processes, get those into their TIP, and move forward with some things. So the overall approach, I'm going to talk about five steps we have here. As you can see, stakeholder and public engagement is right at the center of this. We want this to be an interactive process with Cuyahoga, DOH, local agencies, potentially fire, police, EMS. We want a lot of engagement. We want to hear what the people that live, work, and play there every day feel the biggest issues are. But the general process is a crash trend review, which I'll talk a little bit about later. Then we'll move into a high-level evaluation and screening of high crash locations. So that's where we take the hundreds of potential locations in the counties and try to boil them down into the ones that have the biggest problems, maybe 80 or 100 locations. And then we'll take those and take a deeper dive into those and try to prioritize those locations on which ones are actually the worst, especially in terms of fatals and serious injuries, and the ones we think we could have the biggest impact on if a project would take place there. And then we'll get into actual countermeasures, you know, for those top locations and really identify potential projects for those locations, including costs and potential processes that those would have to follow, and ultimately come up with recommended strategies improvements with an implementation plan that says we'll do this, when we'll do it, who's responsible for it, and what that's going to cost in an implementation plan. So the timeline is a two fiscal year study. We're going to try to squeeze the stakeholder and public engagement into about a 6-month span, as you can see on the schedule. The first stakeholder engagement meeting, I think we're planning on May 23rd for that, if I've got that right. And then we'll have three meetings of stakeholders. So we're working now with Bethany and Salim to come up with a good stakeholder list. We are doing analysis now of the crashes. We've about have the public engagement survey completed. It'll be one of those map style ones, and we'll be getting that out soon to get some input before our first stakeholder meeting. And hopefully the stakeholder meeting people can share that link and start to get that circulating through social media and other channels. We expect a draft report towards the end of January of next year and a final report in March of next year. So real quick, just to whet your appetite here, as far as I'm going to skip ahead a couple slides, Jody. I'm on the total crashes slide. And there were about 17,000 total crashes in the two counties over 5 years. The trend is up a little bit in terms of crashes in those counties, but not a alarming trend up. Vehicle miles traveled was also up during those time frames. So, and the good news is 2017, which is the last year we have data for, there was actually a decrease in crashes. So we hope to see that trend continue. The next slide talks about really injuries and fatalities. Unfortunately, 2017 had the highest number of fatalities. Of the 5 years in those two counties. The good news is serious injuries have been significantly down. There's a trend down, especially since 2013, 2014, in serious injuries. Next column over. So the next slide is just a look at who's at fault in crashes. As usual, it's the man's fault, typically, you know, in a higher level. And then the younger you are, the more likely you are to cause crashes. The next slide talks about what the most frequent types are. And these are the things we'll be digging in more deeply at the specific locations. But you see a lot of rear ends and angles. Those are typically in urban areas at the intersections and driveways. But there are still a lot of crashes related to run off the road, hitting fixed objects, leaving your lane, type crashes we'll be getting into. Next slide breaks down the fatal crashes and the causes of those. You do typically see a lot of what we call fixed object crashes, which is the typical run off the road at higher speeds and hit a tree or pole or something else. The head-ons are always, you know, a typical contributor to fatals. And then angle crashes at intersections also contribute to those fatal crash statistics. And then serious injury crashes, similar but different. You see more serious injury crashes at the intersection. So you see rear end crashes and angle crashes being the greatest percentages in those types of crashes, almost half or really half of the crashes for serious injury, but still some of the fixed object run off the road head-ons contributed to serious injuries. And then the last couple slides here just show you the locations of fatal and serious injury crashes. Huntington, obviously having the most population, the most vehicle miles, is going to have the greatest number. But you can see some of the other locations where there were fatal and serious injury crashes. The next slide, though, kind of highlights what percentage of crashes in these different communities were fatal and serious injury. So even though, you know, the numbers that pop up, if you hit the arrow there, Jody, that's where those places ranked in terms of their overall crashes, but their percentage of fatal and serious crashes in those communities are higher than average in a lot of those. So just because they don't have as many doesn't mean there's not a problem. So that's all the information I wanted to share today. Sorry if I went a couple minutes long, but do you have any questions?
Doesn't appear to be any. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Have a great day, sir. Okay.
Thank you, you too.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is Fifth Street West Bridge Study. Dennis Simpson at AECOM.
Hi, this is Dennis Simpson. I'm with AECOM. I'm the project manager for this effort. We'll talk about the Fifth Street West bridge study that we're doing for Cuyahoga. The bridge was built in 1921 and carries Fifth Street West over Four Pole Creek in the city of Huntington. The bridge is owned and maintained by the city. Next slide. AECOM has completed and begun work on the following scope activities. We've reviewed existing information, including previous bridge inspections, developed two build alternatives, evaluated the required permits and approvals to construct those build alternatives, and have tentatively scheduled stakeholder and public meetings for May 16th, still solidifying locations and other details associated with those meetings. And then we've begun development of the draft design and study report. Next slide. The two build alternatives that we've developed a rehab option and a replacement option. The rehab option will completely replace the superstructure and repair the abutments and wind walls and regrade around the abutment due to erosion. The geometrics of the bridge would be unchanged. Under the replacement option, would be in the same location. The new bridge would be slightly longer and include 3-foot shoulders and a 6-foot sidewalk along the western side, which would tie into the existing trail crossing along Fifth Street West. Next slide. This is a graphic depiction of that replacement up, and it shows the new bridge overlay on top of the existing bridge location. This is kind of giving you an idea of the slightly longer length and slightly wider typical section. Next slide. This is a matrix showing the showing the geometrics associated with the no build and the build alternatives and the costs and required permits and approvals needed to construct the build alternatives. The rehab option has an estimated design and construction cost of $750,000, while the replacement option is $1 million. Next slide. The next steps for AECOM are going forward will be to hold the stakeholder and public meetings in May and then develop the draft and final study report. Next slide. This is just a list of the stakeholders that we intend to be using, inviting to the stakeholder meeting on the 16th. Obviously, the City of Huntington, Public Works, Fire and Police, Greater Huntington Park and Rec District, the Southside Neighborhood Association, the Whitaker Square West Condominium Association, and Dan Ferguson, who's a local resident, very active in the community, as well as being a Cabell County magistrate. In terms of next steps, the study is scheduled to be wrapped up in June with the completion of the design study report. So look forward to sharing that draft report with you and seeking your comments.
Okay.
Any questions?
Seeing and hearing no questions, thank you very much, and hope you have a great day.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, the next item on the agenda is the Arlington Park Mobility Study. Dave Gilmore with GAI.
This is actually James Jost filling in for Dave Gilmore today. And I'll be speaking to the mobility study for Arlington Park neighborhood in the city of Huntington. Slide two. After a brief progress introduction, I'll provide an update on the draft report, review the project area, and highlight our focus areas for improvement, and then finish with an updated schedule timeline. Slide three. Since our last update, we have concluded our data collection, including a self-performed intersection survey at Washington Boulevard and Route 60. We've reviewed all the public feedback in the survey, and we've summarized their input. We've developed recommendations based on short-term, mid-term, and long-term strategies to improve mobility and safety, and begun to develop the draft report for Arlington Park. Slide four. Shown here are a few pages taken from the study. This just allows you to have a beginning understanding as to how the structure of the content we'll be covering and how to be displayed, with each of the six chapters and their subsections being clearly displayed throughout the study. We want this report to be graphic in nature and be able to be easily comprehended to all readers. Slide five. To review our project area, we are focused in on the east end of Huntington between Route 60 to the north and I-64 to the south. We're focusing on the Arlington Park neighborhood, which is actually located left of the dotted blue line. That's actually the city limits for Huntington. We are also acknowledging the influence of traffic generators immediately to the east from Walmart and the Huntington East Middle School. Slide six. To this date, we've selected 10 areas of focus within the project area of Arlington Park that were influenced by the public input, the data that we've collected, and our site surveys that we conducted on site. Slide six. Today, we've highlighted three areas to speak to, just to provide an update. We'll be looking at the Washington Boulevard and Route 60 area near Parkway Drive, the intersection of Saltwell Road and Sumner Avenue, and finally, the stormwater issues along Arlington Boulevard. And slide eight, our first focus area depicted on this map highlights the area of Washington Boulevard and Parkway Drive. Slide nine, with this area, we've developed a list of recommendations to which we have selected three to present today. That would be the closing the channel of the right turn from U.S. Route 60 and stripe U.S. Route 60 shoulder with the right turn lane. We showed an example of how this can look below, noting that there is enough adequate space on the shoulder of Route 60 there. And this is already a movement that we've analyzed that's happening by motorists. We also highlight the Washington Boulevard and Parkway Drive, adding pavement marking to supplement the do not block intersection signs, and delineate lane markings with paint and corresponding signs. Next slide. Next, we're area we've highlighted is the intersection of Saltwell Road and Sumner Avenue. This is the access point to Explorer Academy and the Arlington Park neighborhood. We've highlighted the following items, recommendations here. Coordinate with the local schools for a cross guard at the Sumner Avenue intersection. Add all-way stop control at the intersection of Saltwell Road and Sumner Avenue. Look at widening sidewalks and improving the bus stop at the intersection of Saltwell Road and Sumner Avenue. Upgrade flashing school speed limit signs. And install sidewalks along the south side of Sumner Avenue from Saltwell Road to Parkway Drive. Our last issue that we're going to highlight for today is the stormwater issues along Arlington Boulevard. Realizing this is a concern of the public, we felt it was an issue that needed to be addressed within this study. A couple recommendations on the next slide that we talk about is finding ways to implement green infrastructure along the east side of Arlington Boulevard near the intersection of Arlington Boulevard and U.S. Route 60, and then finding ways to implement green infrastructure along the west side of Arlington Boulevard towards the intersection of Arlington and Norway Avenue. Our next steps are to complete the full draft for the Arlington Park Mobility Study. We're hoping to do this by May and June, have this reviewed by the Cuyahoga representatives for comment, and then we plan to have a final report submitted by the end of June. Any questions or comments? Sorry if I went fast.
No, you're making up time.
Yes.
No, I don't see any questions or comments. Thank you very much. And no other questions. So we'll move on to the next item.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. City of Huntington Pavement Management Program, Jake Painter, Kimley Horn.
Hey, everybody. This is Jake with Kimley Horn. I'll just give you guys a brief update on the pavement management program. Can you guys hear me good? All right. So the project background is just developing a pavement management program that is user-friendly, that can be utilized in both GIS and an Excel spreadsheet. Currently, we've broken it out into about 7 different tasks. We've completed tasks 1 through 3, which was just the on-site assessment, project kickoff meeting, and reviewing existing documentation. Currently going through task 4, we're about 85% complete, so that's the data analysis and then typing up the report. So we can see the light at the end of the tunnel right now. So the next steps will be scheduling and getting the stakeholder meeting coordinated with Kiova and the stakeholders, and then holding a public forum. From that, we'll get some comments and we'll integrate everything into our report, finalizing our report towards early June is the timeline we're trying to hold. So moving on to slide 3, study area was all the streets and sidewalks that are within the city of Huntington city limits, everything that's maintained by the city. So we excluded any state roads, any sidewalks or roadways that were maintained by Marshall University. Moving on to slide number 4. I'll give you an example of the 2 deliverables that we're providing. So one of those is a GIS map and gives everything that's, every street, every sidewalk that's within the city of Huntington, and shows those in space so that you can reference them. So slide number 4 is, it looks a little intimidating because it's got about 50 sheets. And the reason we had to break everything out into 50 sheets was to really provide clean, clear labels for all these streets. So each street, and there's about 300 miles of roadway in the city of Huntington. So each street has a different segment that has a different condition rating to it. So every street's not the same condition. So each of those will have a different rating. So we had to break everything out into different segments. From that, then we had to assign each segment an ID number, and that ID number correlates into the spreadsheet that we're using to filter and really kind of sort through a lot of the data that we've collected. So if you go to slide number 5, you'll see kind of the detailed view of each one of those 50 sheets that we're providing. So again, we give the street name, we give the condition of that street, and then we give the segment ID that will correlate to the spreadsheet. And so the spreadsheet is shown on number 6 or slide number 6. So you can see we've got a lot of different columns, and the reason that the spreadsheets or what the spreadsheet comes into play is to help us prioritize all of the roadways based on, 3 major criteria. The first criteria is the pavement condition, so the rating of what we determined during our assessment, the traffic volume that's going on in the roadway or what the roadway sees on a daily basis, and then any future paving or sidewalk projects that the city of Huntington has identified. So all of those conditions will get lumped into a final equation that we've developed, and then it'll prioritize things based on those 3 values, with the condition being the driver of the equation. So that's kind of the highest priority, is what is the condition? Obviously the second priority being the traffic volume that the roadway is seeing, and then of course any future construction projects that are planned. That also lumps everything, because anything that's obviously planned for 2019 is already going to get completed as part of the CIP. From that, we identify priority level from low to high, and then we have a pavement repair type, whether that's preventive maintenance, rehabilitation, or reconstruction, and then from that, we give an estimated cost. So this is all pretty high level, but it helps you prioritize and identify, and then also have a gut check on what you can budget for these different segments and streets. So you'll have kind of the GIS map that you can reference, you'll have the spreadsheet that you can sort and filter, and all of this will be correlated and easily manageable and navigated by the ultimate, Kiova's client, which is the city of Huntington. We're also providing a summary table, so giving the city an identification or summary table of what their infrastructure looks like, whether that be concrete, asphalt roads. They've obviously got some brick paver roads out there as well, and then gravel being kind of the lowest and in the worst condition. So all of that will get lumped together, and then those will be kind of the two main components of the final report. So moving on to slide number 7, we'll also put everything into a Word document and type everything up. We'll probably start that after we have our stakeholder meeting. To slide number 8, again, finalizing the report, we'll have our stakeholder and public forum meetings in early May, and then we'll finalize the report, print everything, and deliver that to Cuyahoga. We're on goal right now and kind of projecting to have the project wrapped up in early June, certainly before June 30th, which is the completion deadline. So with that said, are there any questions?
Doesn't appear to be any questions. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, the next plan item on the agenda is Marshall University's bike plan. Baby Randolph?
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Hi, baby.
Hey. So thank you, Paul. We are proceeding with into the design phase of the project. If you can go to the second slide, just as an overview, this shows the areas that we're focusing on creating safe connections between the main Marshall University campus and the kind of satellite campus locations in Huntington. If you go to the next slide, we have a survey that we have put together and that is being distributed by the communications office at Marshall. It's going to be sent out in their weekly newsletter as well as in an email to students and faculty. So it's actually going to be sent 3 times. We've put a deadline for May 15th for responses. And so just hoping to get that information and feedback back before the end of the semester, before students are gone for the summer. So the next slide, we just describe a meeting that we just held at the Visual Arts Center. We invited stakeholders from several of the satellite campus locations and had good conversation about the concerns. I think mainly what we learned is there is a need for additional bike parking at a lot of these locations, and then the need to develop clear maps and wayfinding signage to help to identify what these designated routes are to connect between the campus locations. We talked a lot about what are appropriate types of bicycle facilities in order to create safe spaces for all levels and types of riders. And then also a public education and kind of bike safety awareness effort that is focused on educating cyclists on the rules of the road as well as motorists to create a safer environment for both. So then I guess as far as our next steps on the final slide, as I said, we're expecting the survey responses by May 15th and we'll be analyzing that information as it comes in. We are planning an on-campus stakeholder meeting early in May that's going to include the Marshall Police Department, Physical Plant, and the Sustainability Department, who actually manages the rideshare program that Marshall has. So we want to make sure that our recommendations incorporate feedback and ideas from those key stakeholders. And then we're projecting our draft report would be submitted May 31st with the final report by June 30th. Are there any questions that I can answer about the project?
No, see any hands or no one speaking yet.
Okay.
Baby, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have a great day.
You too.
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the Milton Traffic Mobility Study. John Gallagher, Carpenter Marty.
Thank you, Paul. Good morning, everybody. I'm John Gallagher, Traffic and Planning Director for Carpenter Marty Transportation and PM for this mobility study. Purpose of the project is to study the mobility issues of all of Milton, primarily vehicular mobility, bike and pedestrian mobility. We're studying in a prior project, which jointly studied Milton and Barboursville that I'm sure you're aware of. Next slide, please. Milton's general location is depicted along the top. And on the bottom graphic outlined in gray is the city limits of Milton. Jody, if you'll give me a click, the next map will come up. The yellow on the lower right is the proposed Grand Patrician. You can see how significant it is if you compare the size of that yellow to the city limits of Milton. Probably it's going to be annexed, probably increases the city by about 25% land area. The map on the left is the most recent map we have of the proposed Grand Patrician. The development has started on the south side of the project where the old hospital is. That's currently being rehabbed and converted into a hotel and conference center. Next slide, please. We've done extensive field observations, primarily AM and PM peak, but quite a few off peak as well, to try to identify issues and take a look at the known issues that Milton identified ahead of time. Next slide, please. Some early results from the field observations. Main Street and US 60, there's heavy school traffic. The elementary school is to the north, just off this graphic. Large number of left turns onto Main Street from US 60. Left turn lane is something that probably should be looked into further here to improve mobility and safety along the US 60. Next slide, please. Again, here at Pine Haven and US 60, this is another intersection concern that's driven by school traffic, the middle school being on the north side of the graphic there. Fairly significant queuing and some delay, but the signal does seem to be very responsive and the queues clear each time. There was some concerns from Milton and Milton residents that possibly a right turn lane on US 60 was necessary to go north on Pine Haven. We did not see that need, but what we did see is when a lot of people were exiting on Pine Haven, there's no lane striping there. So people kind of make their own left turn lane and right turn lane, kind of fill that area up, and then buses can't make the right to go north. Sometimes they'll sit through the green cycle until everybody on Pine Haven backs up, and that'll cause a queue that won't clear sometimes. So we don't think it's a capacity issue. It's striping of Pine Haven that we'll look into and consider. Next slide, please. John Morris is the north-south route here in the graphic. It's one of the primary routes in Milton. It goes from US 60 up to the 64 interchange. One of the issues that we saw here, John Morris does have some queuing and delay during peak hours. One fairly easy fix that we saw, northbound John Morris to turn left on Harbor Way, which is primarily people going into the Sheets station. That protected left turn cycle comes on regardless of whether there's anybody in that lane or not, which stops southbound traffic and during AM peak will cause some queuing. There's not always people in that left turn lane. So either detection's not working or not working correctly. If we could get detection for those left turn vehicles, we'll significantly improve southbound flow. Next slide, please. What we have here, the routes that are highlighted in Milton are the ones that we did have data for. There wasn't any data collection as part of this project. We used some other studies in the area as well as COVA's model to obtain some ADTs. What this depicts is the most major routes in Milton and their volume to capacity ratios. Green routes are depicting volume to capacity that are below 0.7, which basically means they're operating well. They might have some delay now and then, but primarily congestion free. The yellow routes are indicating locations where the volume to capacity ratio is approaching 1. It's 0.7 to 1. So they probably have some congestion currently. Next slide, please. And you can see here that John Morris and US 60 to the east of John Morris go from yellow, which the prior slide was existing conditions. This is future conditions on this one. The biggest change being the full development of the Grand Patrician, the estimation of that traffic, which has been distributed to the Milton roadway system. So this is kind of the expectation of potential improvement areas. You know, these two routes might need potential improvements before Grand Patrician reaches full build. Next slide, please. In our next steps, the public meeting is scheduled for May 2nd in Milton. We'll digest that public input and determine if additional analysis is needed. The analysis that is currently ongoing will be wrapped up, and a draft report will be developed and submitted. We expect that to be probably within the next month. Any questions?
I don't see any.
Thank you all very much.
Okay. Listen, you have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
The next three items, starting with Lawrence County U.S. Interchange Feasibility Study, Steve Bergman with Static Smith Group. And looks like you have the next three items. If you want to roll right in, though, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll only take about a half an hour of your time.
Okay. Well, you're the only thing between us and us.
Well, it's nice to be here in person. I appreciate it. Usually I'm on the phone, so it's nice to get a perspective of how that works.
Glad you're here.
Thank you. All right. Real quickly, the study area map, we've been through this before, but Burlington Macedonia Road, the west, and US 52 crossing. The east is really the major part of what we're studying as part of this US 52 corridor. So what we're trying to look at is safety, congestion, accessibility, economic development issues along that corridor, trying to correct the number of deficiencies that we found out there. As you know, there's some congestion issues, there's crash concerns out there, some hot spots. So really trying to address those major issues while also improving some accessibility and then encouraging more economic development. Status of the project, we've talked about this before, Walmart Way, Green Tea, safety application. We got funding funding for that through ODOT District 9 and Central Office. So that's moving forward. I'll talk a little bit about Charlie Creek, which we will be submitting April 30th for ODOT funds, safety funds. So the nice thing about all this is ODOT has seen a need. Iowa has encouraged us to approach them to get safety funding. So instead of doing a typical planning study, we're trying to get something built. So at least in the short term, we're still looking at long-term options, which are typically more costly options. But, you know, we've seen a need. With Iowa and District 9 support, we've been able to get some funding and hopefully more funding to at least get some Band-Aids going out there and get some of these things resolved as quickly as possible. We are down to four primary alternatives, medium and long term, and we're going to have a stakeholder meeting and then a public meeting to kind of finalize our long term strategies. And as a result, select the preferred alternative. We expect to have a draft and final report in the next few months. Talk about the green tea. I know I addressed this at the last PAC meeting, but this is currently in design. It is at Walmart Way, basically eliminating conflicts with the left turning vehicles coming out of Walmart Way. separating that traffic. As we know, that's probably the most critical and severe crash type that we have out there. So if we can eliminate that, we can also encourage more through movements on 52 westbound, so they don't have to necessarily stop for a signal there. So we're addressing a couple different issues at that intersection. We submitted the safety funding, and that was approved in last fall by central office. Almost $700,000 was approved. It's currently under design by ODOT in their consultant. Construction to start August 21. So that's pretty quick turnaround. Charlie Creek, met with some folks at ODOT yesterday. We've talked to Kiowa. We've met with ODOT on a number of occasions. But the big issue with Charlie Creek is the queues that are developing on 52. A lot of rear-end type crashes are occurring there. What we'd like to try to do is eliminate that. We've got maybe a short-term fix that seems to be favorable in terms of ODOT safety funding and their safety analysis. So, in essence, changing some lane configurations, delineating lanes, adding basically a right turn lane northbound on Charlie Creek. That's a major movement. If we can make a dedicated turn lane there, we can add more green time to 52. And thus we can minimize those queues on 52. And if you drive out there too, it's difficult. Charlie Creek isn't exactly aligned properly. The lanes are a little offset, which might cause some issues. So, you know, add some clear pavement markings, delineate some widening. So now this, you know, keep in mind it's a short-term fix. I'll give you a couple seconds to review this slide.
The fact about previous slide.
Yeah.
Was I think that ODOT agreed to add to construct a right.
Right. I'm going to talk about that a little bit here, but
this is extremely important for us. You know?
This is what we submitted to ODOT and had them review. I believe it was yesterday, right?
Yeah.
All the days are running down, but yesterday, the ECAD, which is an evaluation of the benefit-cost analysis to the project, is very favorable to this alternative. We talked to the county engineer in Tioga. They wanted to add a dedicated turn lane, right turn lane, eastbound onto Charlie Creek. So there again, we're trying to minimize the queue lengths on 52. By doing that, we believe we'll even gain a little bit more benefit. So, in essence, adding a dedicated turn lane here. So that would require some widening, moving some guardrail potentially, but we're in the process right now of getting that together, resubmitting our safety application for April 30th consideration by ODOT. They'll have interviews next month, and then we should hear about funding, I would think, in the June time. This is what we put together for ODOT. This is part of the safety application. Like I said, I'll give you a couple minutes to review it if you want. I know it's a lot of information, but the thing I wanted to point out is the cost. We've got a cost total under project funding, so about $330,000 right now without the right turn lane on 50. So this is going to change. Now, the ECAD analysis was very favorable. Like I said, predominant crash types are the rear end crashes on 52 that we're trying to alleviate. So, like I said, applications are due April 30th. So we are scheduled to meet that. We hope to have our revised application into them this Friday for review, submit it, and be available for presentation to the central office for funding.
Any questions for Steve?
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you, sir. Glad you're here live and in person.
Nice to be here.
Okay, Sandusky Road Study, Matt Tilhorst, is he available?
Yep, I'm here. Good morning, everybody. Hi there. So,
All right, wrap this up pretty quick here. This is basically the conclusion of the Sandusky Road study. This falls into the same area that Steve had mentioned that they were studying. We're looking at near at the intersection of Sandusky Road and US 52. If you look at the map overview on the second slide there, it shows the area that I presented before, issues with trucks causing some conflicts with other vehicles coming out of the XPO logistics, lining up on Sandusky Road there and causing conflicts with people going using the rehab center and the Casa Grande restaurant. So we had studied three alternatives over the last few months, and we presented those to a property owner and public meeting held in January 31st. If you look at the third slide, it does show the three alternatives that were presented at those meetings. Three different concepts. The first two make some revisions to the township road there in front of Casa Grande, where we either close the existing driveway off of Sandusky Road, or we leave that open and separate them. And then the third alternative was to look at Township Road 1428, which is one road just south of there. So we got some comments back from that meeting. We revised one of the alternatives. So if you look at the last slide that shows the preferred alternative, we took alternative B and made some changes based on suggestions from the stakeholders and the public. And came up with an alternative that provides some more standard, better truck design standards for the trucks using XPO logistics. So they have basically a straight shot. It also allows them more room on Sandusky Road to line up for the traffic signal at US 52. So the road is developed to meet the truck design standards, provides better defined entrances to not only the trucking company, but to Casa Grande and the rehab center. The rehab center is maybe looking to expand some of the parking as well as the facility itself. So they're gonna need some room to grow. The new alternative provides some safe pedestrian crossings, provides some sidewalks for people, because right now they're just walking alongside the road and causing potential conflicts for the trucks driving down the road. And it also then closing that existing drive off of Sandusky would provide some land for future development and would provide for some parking as well, as you can kind of see defined in that little purple rectangle just on the north side of the new roadway there. So the estimated cost for this is $348,000. And we're working with the county engineer to get some survey information for the property lines. And the county is planning on submitting an application for funding to ODOT through the TID program. And that wraps up the study. So any questions, be glad to field them.
Matt, doesn't look like we have any questions. So thank you very much. And I hope you have a nice day.
Okay. Looks like I have one other thing on the agenda. The County Road 15 economic crash. Okay.
I dropped that from the agenda.
All right. Sounds good.
You're off the hook. Thanks again, Matt. We appreciate
all right, thanks.
It. Okay, before we move on to the next item on the agenda, I'd like to remind everybody that there are donuts. And nobody looked for Bethany Stilling. She stopped and got those this morning, or made them last night. We looked.
Oh, we're so sorry.
We don't want to hurt Bethany Stilling. So grab another
donut. I think they're really kind of fresh.
Yeah, but they're fresh. I mean, she swept and got out early this morning. Okay, so we're moving toward now amendment number 9 to the Cova Long Range 2020 integration T and the TIP 2021.
What it is actually a request from Virginia and Kentucky Competition Cabinet to amend the current TIP 2018 and that's really to include highway projects in Cabell County, West Virginia, and Boyd and Greenough counties in Kentucky. Basically, in West Virginia, we have an interstate 64 widening from 4 lanes to 6 lanes, including both bridges, to be replacing Cabell County due to the cost. And for also, we have an installation continuing with that in Kentucky of continuing the green light with concrete islands to separate the traffic flow in US 23, one project, and remove raised median on the Greenough Avenue in US 23, adding two-way turn lane. And also the third one, I think, replacement of the grass median along US 23 in the Greenough County. I have the sponsor of this project, Kentucky Cabell County, here, and we have Chris Kinsey, Kevin from the US, if you have any questions. For Cayuga, Cayuga has completed the air quality conformity report that addresses the Huntington Ashland 1997 8-hour ozone standard. Also, 15-day public review met, began April 4th and concluded on April 19th. So, fortunately, we didn't receive any comments, and we will receive the pledge from Chandra Federal Highway Administration and the Virginia DEP. They concur with our conformity finding. That's what these two projects need to be added.
Well, we certainly need a motion to for this committee to move into the policy committee on Friday. So, is there a motion to do so?
Second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right. The ayes have it. Thank you very much. And Swain, while you're up, you want to talk about the final draft of the work plan?
Yes, this is the final draft of the work plan. I think if we go back to Moscow, we generated the first draft, and this draft is sent to Federal Highway Administration, three KDOD. We received a minor good comment from ODOT, Kentucky Cabinet, and Federal Highway Administration Division. Basically, all comments, we addressed all the comments based on the need. And unfortunately, the comment I received from ODOT, that the lady who sent you the comment, she returned from ODOT. She's no longer from ODOT. That's what. And basically, if you look at the work program, it wasn't changed any activities, basically. Nothing changed. Only just the common format and some to add a few things from the write-up, but nothing serious about financial. So my same change. Now we put that the final draft, and we're supposed to submit this slide. This whole program will change. Basically, this is the roadmap for FY 2020.
Okay, we will need a motion to move it to the policy board on Friday if we agree. Is there a motion to do so? Thank you, Michelle.
Is there a second?
I've been coming to these things for 30 years. This committee never makes motions. It's like boiling tea. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed like aye. All right. Thank you very much. Okay, we've already talked to the next item on the agenda. We talked about that. So, Terry Sticking, you want to discuss the public transportation safety plan?
Yeah, this will be real quick. One of the federal regulations is that now for the transit, that they have to have the transit agencies need to have a safety plan. So that is the effective rule. Well, effective needs to go in by July 19th. Okay, that's just the rule went in effect July 19th, 2019. But they have a year to abide by that. So it's kind of a unique situation again, where Ohio, North Carolina Transit is going to go with the state of Ohio West Virginia PTA is going to go with the state of West Virginia. Actually, unfortunately, it's kind of on their own. So we actually have secured Laura and RLF, who she was speaking earlier today, to provide some assistance to help the Ashland bus system and the city of Ashland to complete that plan. And, you know, maybe it probably won't be able to, they might not have enough funding to complete the plan, but at least give them some guidance. And if they want to secure their assistance to really make a full plan, if they can do that, because actually, you know, it shouldn't be that difficult, but it's something new. So we'll do that. So that's really all we have. I think they've made a basic, they reached out to you once earlier, and so they've kind of started that. So hopefully, I'll be able to have that. Well, and the transit agencies and the rent. Oh, we haven't done that.
Yeah, no,
we've done that. Okay, and so I guess when Laura presented the coordinated plan, we needed to have a motion to approve. Well, what we would like to, this is actually going out, it's unpublic, it's out for public review now. I think it ends May the 21st. What we would like to do is have the draft approved, pending no significant comments, so that we can go ahead and push it through without when it's
okay. So we're okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we do need a motion to approve the coordinated plan as presented by Laura earlier.
So moved.
Okay. There's a second.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Vote. Okay. There you go. Okay, the next item on the agenda is transit systems status updates for the Huntington area. And why don't we start with the Ashland bus? I'll wait until you have a big mouthful of
two things that are new since our last meeting. I have redone the logo on all of the bus systems to be, on all of the buses, it used to be a very small cursive font that you couldn't see. And now it blends with city's logo and it's large and you can see it from a distance, and everyone is loving that. It's easily recognizable.
Is it the same logo?
It is, as far as the city, so it goes across the entire, I have a picture I can show you, it goes across the entire side of the bus with the striping that it's supposed to be the blue and green bridges, what the city logo is, and it has this kind of little check that goes, that runs along behind the words and then finishes off with the check, so. But you can actually see that it takes up the side of the bus and is more easily recognizable. We've heard great feedback that people like that they can identify the difference in what our vehicles are now. And it's branding, it matches. And the other thing is we introduced our first Saturday route. We are doing that the first of every month right now to just kind of get a feel of how the Saturday route will work. We're running it the same as the rest of the week. We had about half of our normal passenger ridership one Saturday, so there was a good, decent turnout. And we're looking at how that will play out and if we want to expand beyond that. But for right now, we feel like the first Saturday is working.
That's exciting. And it's our Ralph, do you want to talk about the
Transit Authority, well, I don't know if Mike can report. I think about three new vehicles recently. The smaller vans, special vans. And then the other thing is that we're about to secure a parking area, parking lot for our transit vehicles. So recently we've been using municipal lots and things there, so this will give us some extra security and happens to be available for the footprint of what we hope to be our future parking transit area. So, we probably will be acquiring that in the next month or so.
That's it.
Anything else?
That's it.
Jeff,
anything
you
want to talk about the EPA?
Sure. Our bathroom and bike rack projects are both complete now.
And we're rolling right into a concrete repair and replacement project. A couple other projects going on. We have three new buses that will be going online in Killing, Livermore, California, in the late fall. We have the 5310 stuff, but I will contact Perry's comments on that. So, there's a lot going on.
I will add that for the three systems, we do have the split letter out, and traditionally it was started in Ashland, and so the 10-year-old ball court, and we have the allocation tables are out from the Federal Transit Administration, so Ralph will be coming to you and Mike, and then the CTA, then once those are pre-signed and approved by basically the CMA, Caoba, we'll have our 5307, 5339, and 5310 allocation for this ensuing year. And once all that happens, it'll be available for us to apply for the operating funds, capital project funds.
And I just want to say, Michelle, once you get it signed, if you want to call me, I'll come pretty much take it out, and
okay.
I'll drop it over to you on my way to work that day.
Next thing is transportation performance management coordination. Selena.
actually, the only thing I'm going to say is that she can add was the transportation performance management milestone quickly approaching, okay, over that May 20th, 2019 deadline for building in BN2 and 3 for the NPD and the TIP and TIP updates under first acceleration. That's what really, hopefully, we will meet that before this deadline, and we're going to avoid it for modification.
Yep. Yeah, we're just working. Jody's helping to work on identifying projects that will fall into those categories. So we should have that done.
And if you notice, the DM1 for the safety performance, that they will complete and will meet that requirement now. For the two, for the pavement and bridge, and the system performance that federal deadline May 20th. And they have Laura and Chandra here. Do you want to add anything? That since that's your expertise area.
No, just, you know, if you guys need any help, obviously.
Yeah. We probably will send it to you.
What is it?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we have a whole bunch of brief project updates, and so I guess we'll start with Chandra and federal update.
So nothing ground shaking from our side. The only thing I will say is that we, next year around this time, we will be completing the second PMA certification. So just a reminder that within the next few months and things like that, you'll start seeing information coming out from my side. Coordinated with the rest of our federal partners to set up all of those meetings, the public meetings and everything like that. So you've made it through one cycle, and we're going to start up the second one. So, exciting time.
Any news about reauthorization?
Yeah, because they always call me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Okay, Tri-State Transit, or Transit Authority, the airport project. Is Brent here? Okay.
Bethany, maybe she was saying something in the
video. You need to go look at it. Yeah.
When's the ribbon cutting?
I don't know if they have a date yet.
You went for the last meeting, right?
Yeah.
I think all of the data from these, the economy from these.
Yeah, they were waiting on, I think.
Yeah, actually, I remember they're waiting really for the state inspection for the elevator. The state has to come and inspect the elevator to make sure it's supposed to operate.
It goes up and down.
Waiting for the inspection.
It looks really nice. It's really nice.
It's really a piece of work. It's like artwork in there. But yeah, I think it should be done soon. I don't have a date. Yes, and we do have a very nice plaque that says, you know, the funding came from Federal Highways, Tioga, Airport, DOTs. So it's a really nice, a very nice large plaque.
Okay, you want to go ahead and talk about the project?
The only update we had, Hal Greer Corridor Management Plan. I don't know if you all have any updates on that, but we had a meeting, a public meeting, a stakeholder meeting, where they presented the draft plan, and so it's out for review. We're reviewing it right now. But hopefully, they should finalize things. William, I don't know if you have anything to add on that.
I think it's moving and ready to close.
West Virginia DOT tip updates. Chris?
Yeah. We have completed our public outreach portion of the new STIP development process. So I guess moving forward, we're just going to look at going through all the proper channels now that we have a new commissioner and a new secretary. We had to do some revisions to a lot of that document. But we're going through all the internal approval processes and reviews, and then we're going to get it over to FHWA. I'm not sure if that's taking one yet or not. I think Rob tried to get it out before we left. And I predict kind of. That's coming. Let's see. The next thing is that the
planning conference is coming up in
next week.
Next week. Yeah, so that's coming up. And Jody has been great, kind of being the liaison with the NPO Association. We appreciate him, you all lending him us on every other Friday up in Charleston, throughout the whole development of the conference. And we appreciate that, Jody, for sure. Project updates. I don't think a whole lot has changed since the last time. I know you all had to bump up your meetings because of the planning conference. So Glowden Interchange is still kind of stalled for the moment due to that railroad negotiation. There's not really any issue with the actual interchange itself. It's more of the tie-in to 60. It's a problem. We're looking at spanning over top of the railroad. You should be getting ready to see some movement at 164. I saw where the slide, and that really, like, they moved a lot of dirt there. Last time we came through, the mud is over at 64 interchange. A ramp there. That was great. I'll have each one. Wow. That's great. I think 52. That was the last I heard was it was stalled almost indefinitely until we figure out this Native American artifacts and remains and stuff that they had found at the location they were at. I did notice, sorry, I said I didn't have any modifications at the beginning, but you all submitted infra grants earlier this year in January, not build grants. On the agenda is still, you submitted for Cologne Interchange?
Yes.
That was actually an infra grant, 2019 infra grant. The 2019 build grants were just announced, and their submission deadlines are in July, like July 7th. So if you all want to submit Cologne again, I'm sure that would not be out of the question for sure. So they just announced the new build grant initiative, and we are looking for candidate projects for us, the DOT, to submit for that effort. So do you all have any suggestions or whatnot? We already have a bank of projects that we're going to pull from if we don't receive any additional. But we're limited to three. The cap that we can ask for is 25 again. So it's the exact same stipulation that it seems like that's what it was.
Chris, just for you, actually I called you 3 days ago.
Yeah,
I talked to you. I know you've been busy in the road. Actually, I have some news for you about for the infra grant application was submitted.
Yeah.
US DOT, they contacted us and they said they interested in our benefit cost ratio analysis for the. And this is really kind. They, out of many applications, they saw they love the analysis and gave our role for the benefit cost ratio.
Yeah.
And they requested from us the spreadsheet. And we did send it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, now they're reviewing the application. Seems
okay.
To me, we don't know what's going on, but.
That was for the infra that you
Yeah, for the infra,
right?
For the colonial.
Okay, if you get it to that point, then they're probably seriously looking at
you. Actually, I called you to let you know, but unfortunately, maybe you saw it in contact, and I called again, but.
Seems like you all have made it a little bit.
Then I gave up. But this is what's going on the national level. Seems to me our application is under review now, and from Chandra, if you can help us to get the portfolio.
I know that headquarters did call our office at some point in time. It was when I was out of town.
Yeah.
I believe Jason can.
Oh, good. And really, we were so excited when we know, I mean, they came to pay over the smallest CNA in the country and they took our application and said, we saw something big going on.
Did we agree to do 50-50 on that? Is that what we did? The split?
Yeah, we did 50-50.
Yeah. So that was a little bump up from what we did the last time, right? I can't remember what
we said. Yeah, but it seems to me that they're interested to know what's the business cost ratio, how we are from a success.
Yeah. That's good. Good.
There being one.
Got a question for you. How many bill grants got funded last year?
Too much. Oh, gosh. In West Virginia, only two.
Two.
We had the Berkeley Springs bypass and Porter Ridge, maybe. Yeah. And both of those were $20 million.
$20 million, and what was the max? So you,
the max was 25. And we applied for 25, but they countered for 20. We accepted that.
You applied for $20 million and you spent a $25 million with it, so $45 million project? $25 million and a $5 million match.
The US 522 Berkeley Springs bypass was increased, I think it's like $75 million total now. When we originally submitted that application, it was estimated at 50. So yeah.
The grant pays for inflation.
Right. Well, the original estimate with that project, we had the hospital and some local real estate. They were willing to donate because we were going to build a connector. They were willing to donate some of their land. That had been a couple years ago. Well, I guess that had changed. So now we're at the five.
I got one last question. How many, do you have any idea how many build projects were submitted statewide last year?
Statewide is quite a few. We did three. Bellamar did, I think, two. HEP did probably two or three themselves. And you all did, what did you all do? Did you get below that?
Yeah, below that, yes. 52.
52.
But then we decided not to proceed with the two preservation.
Yeah, I don't think you should have done the 52.
No, no, we're not going to do it.
All I had.
do have a new chief district engineer. His name is Steve Donald, and he's been on the job less than a month now, but we do appreciate the hard work that Mark Ryan did and in his 10 years of service. Certainly wish him the best, but I'm sure Steve Gunner, with anybody that works with our district, would like for him to, or he would love for me to reach out and speak to him. In Boyd County, 9-8400, that's US 60 from I-64 at Interchange 181 to the Kentucky 180 intersection of Cannonsburg. That is still scheduled for an August 2019 meeting. We're hopeful that we will get there. We still have some utility issues remaining, but we're still hoping for an August 2019 meeting. 9-404, that's a planning study / environmental assessment for the Rush Off-Road Recreational Area. There's a county road that goes into the area. It's inadequate geometrically for the traffic, the amount of traffic that the Rush Off-Road facility generates. And so we're doing a planning study to look at that and also to address some flooding issues there. So we're looking probably at another access route. So that study should be completed sometime this summer. AECOM's working on that. In Boyd County, the biggest project there is 9-1073. That's a bridge replacement, the old Russell Viaduct Bridge. On Kentucky 244, we were hoping for spring lading, but it's been pushed to July because of some right-of-way issues. So hopefully we'll get that going pretty quickly. And as far as the Bridge in Kentucky initiative that we have, we in Grant County, we have just recently led two bridge projects, and in the next couple of months, we have three more bridge projects in rehabs, replacements, and all that. So a lot going on there with Bridge in Kentucky. So as far as design and projects that have not been laid yet, that's the updates I have, but I'll turn it over to Matt for construction.
I've got some stuff to work on now, and I'll be working on this summer. We've got a concrete intersection project on US 23 at the westbound I-64 ramps in Catlettsburg. The start date is anticipated to be May 20th on that, completed by July 31st. We currently have a US 23 paving project that goes from the refinery to the Green at Winchester split. This week, they're going to be working on replacing damaged sidewalks. Next week, they're going to start tearing out base failures and paving. We have a I-64 paving project from mile marker 181 to 184. That's from basically the US 60 intersection to the Kentucky 180 intersection. And they're anticipated starting that on May the 20th also. There's a bridge. It's on Kentucky 854 over Garner Creek. Eagle Construction Services received a contract on that. They're planning on a superstructure replacement. That will also start the week of May 20th. We have a microsurface project on Kentucky 168 that will start in June, and that's going to be the entire section from US 23 in Catlettsburg to US 23 in Ashland. We have a Greenup County project that we're currently working on. It's the Kentucky 2 HSIP project. About 5 miles of that. It starts at US 23 and goes to Gullet Bridge. And then in addition to the construction, we just have regular maintenance projects going on, pothole patching, mowing, ditching, pipe replacement.
Very good. Thank you. Anything else, Ohio DOT. Just got Thomas. I guess we're
going to default back. I guess. Well, we have PID 97484. That's the US 52 Salter Road interchange. That was the roundabout project. We're doing punch list items now and close out. So hopefully this will be the last time I get to discuss this one in this meeting on this standpoint, on the construction side. We have PID 98668, that's a bridge or a county road 10A at the 0.91 mile mark. That's a bridge replacement. That's a total project cost of $1.6 million. That's budgeted. We'll be well under that. We're working on contracts right now. That is a design build project. And we're also using, that's a federal state exchange project. So we're basically going by the state regulations, switching out funds for federal funds. So We have the PID 99201, that is County Road 15 and 18 resurfacing project, and I actually have a pre-construction on that today. That is a $1.46 million project, roughly 11.35 center line miles of road pavement. We have PID 101868, that is the County Road 410 roundabout project, that is on the interchange of Walmart Way. That's listed for fiscal year 21. That's kind of been held a little bit with all the other improvements that's going on the US 52 corridor. We also have PID 103781, that is the County Road 104 at the 2.40 mile mark. That's a bridge replacement. That's listed for fiscal year 2023. That's roughly a $1.6 million budget number. We have the 106508, that is the US 52 and State Route 243 interchange improvement. That's two roundabouts at the ramps for 52, off of 52 on State Route 243. We're working on funding right now. I think we're shooting for fiscal year 21 on that project. We're looking at sub-allocated funds and trying to get our ducks in a row on getting some of the local match. We have two ER projects, 109-322 and 109-323. Those are landslide repairs that are on County Road 2 at the 0.97-mile mark and 3.53-mile mark. And advertising will start tomorrow at the 0.97-mile mark. We're looking at total project cost of around $300,000 for that one. The other one's a little bit more, but a little longer in length. But I'm waiting on that till we get the first one done so I don't landlock a bunch of people. Those are the current projects we have going on in Orange County.
County.
I'm just going to say a couple projects that would impact this area here. US 35 State Route 7 project connectors that, you know, we've worked on for several years and we've done some feasibility things over the years. We're waiting to see what's going to happen with ODOT, with additional funding, with what direction they're going to go with TRAC. You know, we presented TRAC, you know, several years ago, and but the last few years they haven't had any money. I'm not sure where they're going to go with the scoring system and if they are going to have a change on the scoring system. And at that point, we're going to redo our feasibility study and some of our preliminary engineering to make sure that we can at least submit that project in if we have the opportunity for that again. We've submitted two bill grants last year. We're actually in the process of updating those right now to resubmit for this upcoming year. One of them's on US 35. We're addressing additional interchange and completing a bypass of Galapagos City, as well as fiber installation. We're partnering with a telecommunication company to possibly have a loop connection, a closed loop. You know, we're reaching out to Toyota and some of our other partners to see if we can provide some other opportunities for them in our county. Last project, and this is an ODOT project, but I thought it's relevant here. I just want to mention this, but which we're ODOT District 10. ODOT is in the process of doing some preliminary meetings that here over the next, I think maybe next year is when they're looking at doing a, there's a section of concrete pavement from Eureka on State Route 7 to just north of Crown City. And what they are looking at is it's 50-year-old concrete pavement. They want to redo that section. It's several miles long. They either close all of State Route 7 and route everything on detour down State Route 218, which would be a huge detour, a long detour, which would extend the project out to as much as two full years, or, well, to about one and a half years. But if they do part with construction, they said they're going to be at two full years of construction. So know, we're still weighing our options, what direction they're going to go. I think we're trying to err on the side of safety. 218 is pretty curvy for those of you that's been on that route. And even though we don't necessarily want part with the construction, we see that as maybe a better opportunity for traffic on 7. That's all I have.
Thank you. Just wanted to add one thing for the connector. Correct me if I'm wrong. For the connector that 775 and 35, that's 2/3 of the connector in Lawrence County, right?
Yeah, it's connecting US 35 in Gallia County to State Route 7 in Lawrence County, near, not too far from where 775 comes
in.
Do you
know what the length of that?
It's about 30 miles.
And roughly 20 miles in Lawrence.
Yep.
Basically, just maybe you mentioned that. What so far completed that connector? Did any study before completed or anything?
We've done some feasibility, and matter of fact, right now we're looking at doing a safety study to see if there's any way we could start building some of the sections.
Do you have some mind that study?
Yeah, we do have a study, and I can share that.
I'm like the father, the guy said it to me, I like to read it.
Okay. Is there anything else to discuss about the build and everything else that we have here with Jody?
I think Jody wants to add something.
No, I think we've covered
the whole thing. Okay. Just want to make sure.
Let me mention real quick, because I forgot to. On the Federal Highway TCM site, a good portion of every state's information is now live on there. So there's a map, like on a state, you can see what targets have been set. I don't think it's fully populated yet, but they're getting there as they're entering information and they're updating it pretty regularly.
Yeah, and I think there will be a larger public release coming out.
Thank you. Okay, the next item I have on the agenda is the Kiowa Solid Allocation Funds, and looks like round 6 is in progress.
I think
just to kind of give you an update, we had quite a few applications this time. We had the Alger Boulevard street lining for West Virginia and TTA purchase buses. We had four of the projects on our amendments for Kentucky were from that process as well. We have also some purchase of buses for Ashland, some bike racks, and some other pedestrian bicycle related projects. So we had a good variety of projects, which is really what we want to see, since we do, you know, kind of, we want to cater to all modes of transportation.
One from Ohio,
South Point, the Village, for sidewalks, for the downtown area. I think it's kind of off the Solida Road. And we're working on programming those. We sent a request to West Virginia DOH in March. All of but one project for Kentucky has either been addressed through modifications or amendments, and we're working on that last one. It was just an oversight. It was kind of added, it wasn't added later, it was just that we didn't have all the details, so we're doing that. And then the Solid Road, we have that in the Ellis. So, you know, all the projects are in the works. We're working with each of the sponsors. If there are any planning studies, for the future, they will be put for the RFPs on our website sometime after July. And so if anybody is interested in that, just make sure you kind of keep checking back with that or on the ODOT website, and they should have all the information for that as well. I think that if we may have any questions, like I said, I have all the information, but I've got a folder that are about, you know, thick, you know, so if you have any questions, let me know. I have all the documentation.
Okay, thank you. Other business, various, the slain staff, you guys want to talk about what on?
I think we need from Federal Highway Administration in Ohio Division. If there is any update on the staff there, I know some people left, some people joined in.
Yes.
I saw some new names through IT yesterday that I received an email from your division. I'm not sure what his name or her name.
For ITS?
Yeah.
It's Mrs. Triessa Keller. She's been with us.
New, right?
She's been with us for a couple of Maybe a year or so now.
The first time I saw an email came from her.
Yeah, yeah, she's, I think she's reaching out to MPOs on an initiative, but we have a lot of turnover, whether people have left for other positions or are acting. So basically the entire planning side, there's somebody acting as the director, and that position should be filled relatively soon, hopefully. And then the planning and environment team leader position, I think, is in the works to be posted fairly soon. So yeah, you may be seeing information from people you don't normally hear from because they are in an acting
capacity. Okay. I'm seeing a lot of email. I couldn't really grab my phone.
Yeah. Yeah, if you have any questions, please feel free to contact me and I can coordinate with whoever is reaching out with you.
Is there anything discussed on the hard gas tax increase?
Actually, we have two counties in the east. They can't tell us more.
I will tell you, counties, all the counties received about $1.53 million from the gas tax increase, which included 10.5 cents on gas, 19 cents on diesel, hybrids, electric, CNGs are also being taxed a nominal sum as well. So it's about $1.53 million increase that we're all going to see. Townships are mainly around $57,000. Each township will see an increase about that much. And then Ironton is $234,000 increase. It's based on
money doubled, right? Seems to me.
Not well. About half, not quite, a little over half of what we're currently getting for the gas tax. So
about 50%.
Yeah.
And this increase for good, right? Not like for the getting this money.
Yeah, it starts in July, and it's just gradual.
We'll see the money in October.
I think you will start getting that increase starting October, right?
Yeah.
That's when we'll see it.
We'll see about October once it goes through the gas stations, and by the time it gets taxed through, and by the time we get certified and back to us, it's going to be October. We're probably going to be looking at a year of seeing what we actually get. That's all projected. Especially with having a differential on diesel and gasoline, none of us knew what that was. It's always reported to us in total gallons because it didn't matter whether it was diesel or gasoline. So it'd be interesting to see what we finally get once the year's complete. But we're probably, by the time we look to see how much we get, we're probably looking at summer 2021 by the time we do projects.
If there was any changes or impacts, I know that in the draft or the proposed by Governor Keith, that there was money supposed to be allocated to local public agencies that administer projects.
OPWC got some.
Right.
Yeah.
Municipalities.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
right.
Townships all got money. Okay. And ODOT got 55% of basically all that increase. The locals were municipalities, townships, and counties were up here. Just about all that was 45%. And then a high public works commission got a small sliver.
I think the net was 14.2 cents. If you consider all of the funding, that included bonding. So without the bonding, I think it was 13. 6 cents, but the bill ODOT gets the first 2%, and then it's divided up 55-45, so 55 to ODOT, 45 to the local program. This is what I understand. When Brett was talking about increased funding, that's for local. So larger percentage of local money is coming as a result of this.
But I will say, ODOT said that their shortfall and their need is about $1 billion. Based on these numbers, I think what I saw was they received about $580 million. They're getting about 58%. Still not getting it. And that need was specifically. And ODOT, I mean, they calculated the shortfall. County engineer perspective, statewide, every county engineer is the same.
tax, same amount, but our shortfall was about $670 million. Look at how much county's got. We got about 50% of our, so we're still not made whole, still not a silver bullet. Every little bit helps, but we also know in 5 years, we're back to legislature asking for more money. We see construction inflation like we have the last 10 years. It'll be gobbled up, and we'll be back where we are.
Yeah, I think the
I don't want to show a bad picture, but we're preaching it for the money. But
that's reality.
I think the biggest disappointing appointment was most of the Brett testified, some other folks testified, and we're asking for indexing. That did not go through, which is disappointing. But the indexing would have allowed me to retire without addressing the situation again. But unfortunately, it did not happen. So, like Brett said, another 5 years or so, we're probably going to be going back. I think we're still under, if you look at our neighboring states, we're still under closest neighbors they're putting into their systems. Like I said, we're all appreciative of the effort of the governor. It went very hard to get this thing through. So.
Well, I have part of the answer. The Highway Trust Fund is severely underfunded on the federal level. We're getting ready to reauthorize, and we need at least 5 cents on the gallon for the next 6 years.
They're supposed to.
We haven't closed the business since we've seen a raise in the gas user if they don't use tax. It's been a long time. It's been in the 90s, I believe.
Yeah, 93.
Yeah. But it's a white bullet. We want the frozen bridges and buttons, so we got to be able to pay for it.
I think that I told Salim here the other day, I said, you know, we were up in SDRT in D.C., and I asked that very question. You know, it's kind of like I hate even asking. I'm sure they get it. But they said the sentiment is, you know, if they raise gasoline tax at a level, then that's more money that they're going to pull out of our pockets. They're going to put the regulations on and give it right back to us. That's the different thing. I think it's a cop out. I think it's the way to do it. But, I mean, we really want it. We need the money. But
yeah. In the chat. A couple of things I might mention. In the city of Ironton, we're receiving grants. They're more economic development grants related to the expansion of the local timber, the moose or graph industry there. They're going to be looking at reconstructing South 3rd Street and the industrial sector from the rain out to the Colt Road limits, which would then tie into the new roundabouts. So those funds probably be later this year, thanks for that project. And the city is also taking a look at bonding out a fairly major repaving package and things based on the new revenue streams and things they develop. So.
Right. You have a short video.
Yep.
We already talked about the planning conference.
Planning conference, I think, Chris, you want to talk about the planning conference?
He did.
Have a
seat.
He did.
Okay.
We have a short video. Patrick, do you think we can do this at 2:43? Thank you. More time, so.
It's right outside Sevierville.
Okay, so we're winding down, and the only thing anything between us and lunch is the Excova schedule and meeting. At the bottom of your page, you won't read those aloud.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. We had a slim spot. That was there. You can get a microphone.